Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination, and you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Hello, everyone. I am Lynn. That's my name, Lynn, and I'm your host for Talking Twilight Zone. And I'm here with my wonderful co-host, Bobby Robert, and Dave hopefully will be in later. He's having a little problem, but hopefully he'll be in later. So I'm here with Bobby Neer and Robert. Hello, guys.
Howdy, Lynn.
A happy Saturday to everyone. So today's episode is titled The Silence, and I'm going to turn it over to Robert for the opening clip.
And now, Mr. Serling.
There are all kinds of wagers and all kinds of odds. From the spin of a roulette wheel to a $2 crust of board at a racetrack. On the Twilight Zone, with the aid of Mr. French O'Toon, we tell the story of possibly the strangest bet ever to occur in the annals of chance. Our program is called The Silence.
Well, thank you, Robert. I appreciate that. And before I begin, I would just like to say, Dave, are you here?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, yay!
All right,
we got Dave. All right.
No. Before, that was me testing something. I knew I could get on the show.
That's all right. Yeah. I'm just so glad you're here now. Okay. The silence. It takes place in an exclusive men's club. And a young man named Jamie Tennyson is a member of this club. And he has a reputation for being a loud, arrogant talker who never shuts up. So Colonel Archie Taylor, he's another member of this club, and he's sick and tired of Tennyson's pampering. So in an effort to some peace and quiet, he wagers $500,000 that Tennyson can't go for one full year without saying a single word. $500,000 that this guy can't go for 1 year without saying one single word. His friend and his lawyer, George, tries to advise him that this is not a good bet, but he insists on making the wager. So while Tennyson is annoyed at Taylor for making such a bet with him, he still agrees to the wager. The stipulation is that Tennyson will live in a glass enclosure with microphones placed all around, so he can be watched and monitored all the time. And that's fine. Well, the enclosure, of course, is situated in the bottom of the club. So now, month after month passes, and Tennyson is holding strong to his part of the bargain, much to Taylor's dismay. So in desperation to get out of his part of the bargain, Taylor constantly goes to the enclosure. And there's this little, I don't know what you call it, little talking thing where you can talk into the enclosure, and he goes down there and he tries to upset Tennyson by spouting off rumors and innuendos about Tennyson's wife. And incidentally, one of the reasons that Tennyson's problem is arising, one of the reasons he needs money, is because his wife has very expensive tastes. Her appetite is for jewelry and expensive things, but he loves her very much. He's very much in love with her. So even though he's got these rumors going on, he remains silent. Now, 1 year later, Tennyson emerges from his enclosure. He walks into the club, holds out his hand in front of Colonel Taylor, and Taylor reveals that he lost all of his money years ago and can't pay off on the bet. Oh, my goodness. Taylor tells Tennyson that he is the weaker man and will resign from the club. But that's a little consolation when Tennyson, with tears in his eyes, writes on a note to Taylor that he knew he'd never be able to keep the end of his bargain. So 1 year ago, he had his vocal cord severed. He pulls away his scarf, revealing his surgical scar to to the stunned and horrified crowd of men. Ooh, okay, well, it's amazing what lengths people go to for money. I mean, but then again, you know, $500,000 is nothing to sneeze at. I can't even imagine permanently giving up my ability to talk, walk, or live in a normal fashion for any amount of money. But, I don't know, for $500,000, I'd consider it. I might consider it. I don't know. But, Robert, would you consider it for $500,000?
Nope, not for cutting myself out of society, I wouldn't.
Remember,
yeah.
Unless I have something backed up. Yeah.
Remember, guys, this is equivalent to about $10 million now.
Oh, well, yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, $500,000. Yeah, but I might consider it, but I would not mutilate myself to do it. I would not sever my vocal cords or do anything that would cause me to, you know, destroy the rest of my life. I mean, come on, he severed his vocal cords. He'll never speak again. Okay, well, anyway, I suppose my main question here is, why didn't Colonel Taylor simply bet Tennyson $5,000 that he couldn't stay silent for 2 or 3 months? He stated when he proposed the wager that he didn't expect Tennyson to stay longer than that, but at least he'd have the pleasure of 2 or 3 months of wonderful silence and solitude without having to hear Tennyson's voice. So that's the part that bothers me. You know, he wants to wager money that he doesn't have, $500,000, and he knows he doesn't have it. And then when things get right down to the wire, you know, he starts saying, well, I'll give you $1,000, I'll give you $5,000. That is just beyond belief to me. So, therefore, that itself is not, that is not kosher to me. I don't get that. And, you know, why bet an amount that's unrealistic? And also, he keeps talking about his wife. Okay, the guy goes down there and tells him that his wife is cheating on him. She's running around. She's doing this. She's doing that. Well, you know, first of all, if the woman was so money hungry, how could he possibly think she would remain faithful to him for a year, a whole year, when he's locked away in a room? How are the bills being paid? Does anyone know how the bills are being paid? And he claimed he was broke, and his wife was visiting Tiffany's all the time. I don't get it. It just never. And he sent her letters. He sent her letters saying, "Come visit me," but she didn't want to visit him. He never came. She never came. So I don't understand it. It makes no sense. The woman, he's in love with a woman. He did this for the woman he's in love with. She never came to visit him, and come on, does this make sense to anybody here? I mean, I like.
Well, his wife moved on. I pretty much.
She
do,
obviously.
I think.
Thank you. Yes, she obviously moved on. I'm going to go in this room for a whole year. I'm going to be isolated from my wife, who is a money-hungry woman and likes jewels and she likes money. I'm going to cut my vocal cords. So now, when I come out a year from now, I'm not going to be able to speak to her. And, you know, this is the woman he loves. I'm not going to be able to speak to her. And, you know, a year, she's going to wait a whole year for him. And I'd like to know who's paying the bills and who's substantiating this woman. I don't get it. You know, but actually, I like this episode. I like it. For all these flaws, I like it. I mean, I didn't think it was slow. I thought it moved along well. It had the right amount of suspense. The mood and the atmosphere were right. It was interesting to see the colonel's personality turn so dark and evil as it got closer and closer to him losing the wager. And also the men in the club, who were once as annoyed by Tennyson as the colonel, applauded Tennyson at the end and felt sorry for him. They were repulsed by the colonel because of what he did. So it was a nice little turn of the tables, I thought. And one other thing I want to mention, one of our Yahoo group moderators gave this episode a 0 because she felt it was not a Twilight Zone type episode due to no science fiction or fantasy or supernatural aspects. Well, I'm sorry, but this is not the first and certainly not the last episode in the series to have no supernatural, fantasy, or science fiction aspects to it. In fact, one of the better episodes of season 3 have none of these aspects to it, and she rated a very high rating. So, you know, that I don't get, but, you know, Rod Serling never proposed that the Twilight Zone stories were strictly stories of a supernatural or fantasy nature. He said himself in interviews on one or more occasions that he wanted the series to be stories dealing with the actions and reactions of people in unbelievable and incredible situations, as well as the consequences of their actions. And he described them once as life lessons, morality plays, you know. And Carol Serling, his wife, also stated in an interview that Rod never considered himself a great science fiction writer or translator of the mystique. You know, she said he merely wanted his stories to drive home a point and make the viewer think and use their imagination. The truth is that Rod was a great science fiction writer, even if he didn't think so. But he wrote plenty of things that had nothing to do whatsoever with fantasy or science fiction. So in this episode, I thought the action was a little slow, but the acting itself was good all around. There didn't need to be action in this because it wasn't necessary. The acting was good. One interesting fact is that Franchitone, who played Colonel Taylor, he was badly injured on the left side of his face one night and didn't show up for the second day of shooting. And Rod Serling didn't want to recast the part, so he told Franco that they would film only the right side of his face, and that is why you only see him from that angle for most of the episode, which makes him seem more sneaky and despicable when he's trying to tempt Tennyson with stories of his wife's infidelity. So anyway, this episode always fascinated me. I like this twist ending, and the first time I saw it many years ago, I didn't know what to expect at the end and was surprised, but I especially liked Liam Sullivan's acting during that final scene. The anguish and tears on his face were impressive. I felt sorry for him, even though he did a very stupid thing. So my rating on this is a 3 for good, and I'm going to turn it over to Robert.
Okay, thank you, Lynn. Yeah, one of the things I've said in my reviews is how some of the episodes in the latter half of the second season, you know, had ratings around average to good, depending on, you know, who voted or how they felt about this episode. But to me, this is another episode that's kind of in between. One of the questions, and as Lynn was talking about, you know, raising the question of how is this a Twilight Zone since there's no monsters, alternate world, strange sightings. It's like Lynn said, I mean, Rod never said that it was purposely just all supernatural. There's also drama. One of the ones we're reviewing now, I kind of feel is kind of a drama more than a Twilight Zone itself. But on the Talking Twilight Zone show here, usually Rick comes on. We hadn't seen him, so hopefully Rick will come back sometime. He mentioned, as Lynn said,
yeah,
morality
plays. I miss Rick.
Yeah, and you know, I kind of agree with Rick on this one that it is a morality play, pretty much. We mentioned that with some other episodes as well. The Templeton one was a morality play. So, I mean, I thought this episode was The way I rated it, I kind of had to even it out. But points I did bring up about this story is early on, if you watch, there's a clue that's given when happened to Jamie when the butler brings him his dinner. And the colonel asks how he is eating. The butler said up to a week ago. So from the point he went in to up to a week, something had to happen to him where he wasn't eating now. It could have
been his throat had to heal and nobody caught on to that, right?
Right. He could have been jittery. I mean, but it was a good guess that probably what happened. It kind of gives you a hint. Tennyson should have insisted that some form of backing be present. I mean, you know, he tried with the certified check, you know, and said no, but still, you know, as Dave mentioned earlier, to take a bet like that, you should have some kind of backing to back it up.
Well, wouldn't you imagine that if somebody bets you $500,000 and you have to go for a whole entire year, 365 days, without speaking, and you have to do this? And the person says, no, I'm absolutely not going to give you any backup. I'm not going to prove that I have the check. Screw you. You're going to show me that you have the money in the bank account. That's crazy. Would you do that without knowing that person had that money to back it up?
Right. You have to weigh the odds. I mean, to be, first of all, you know you're not going to be quiet for a year, that you're going to make some kind of noise or something will happen where the bet's off. And if you do like you did in this episode, you know, you cut your tongue off, is it worth cutting yourself off from society? Now, I mean, there's people that in society that are deaf or they can't speak, and use sign language to give them around or write things down on paper to get them through life. And they seem to go through okay that way. But it depends on the individual themselves. You know, I personally wouldn't do something like that because I just feel that it's not worth it.
He was depending on the other men in the club vouching for his credit. Remember, he says, well, my credit is well known here. And all the men go, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Actually, it wasn't well known, was it? Because he had no money.
No, it just came down to Tennyson's desperation of how badly he needed the money.
Exactly.
And, you know, as you said earlier, at the end it comes to light that Colonel don't have, can't keep the end of his wager. Well, then the other point I bring up, too, then all the old geezers of the club should have ponied up the money. Because they're just as responsible as the colonel himself in this situation.
Exactly.
So, I mean, they had the money. They could have ponied up the $500,000. And also, here's a nice lawsuit waiting to happen on the colonel. I mean, you know, let's sue him for everything. And in turn, it could turn around that he could own the club for what happened to them. But then that would be a legal decision between an oral contract and a written contract, too.
Right, exactly, situation. Yeah. Yeah.
But Jonathan Harris, I liked him even though his
was
a small
role. Oh, I love that guy. I love that
role.
Guy, yeah.
Yeah, I liked him in Lost in Space and you know, other films and stuff that he's done. But I also have just one clip because the thing about this episode is most stuff is silent and non-listening, so, and you don't have visual here, so, you know, there's not really items that you can bring up or talk about. Because, for example, a silent movie, Metropolis, is a good example to where it's all silent with just the music as the background. There was two versions of Metropolis. One is the, this was Fritz Lang's movie back in the 1920s. One was the original that they played, and then they did an up-to-date modern, I think in the 90s it was, soundtrack for Metropolis, and I've seen both of them, and I kind of like the updated music version for that one as well. But I mean, there's plenty of silent films, you know, before they went talkies in the 1930s that you could watch. But one that came up to particular is a Buffy episode called Hush. It aired in season 4, and this was kind of a challenge for Whedon because. And it's good to be challenged, especially as a writer, to, you know, come up with something to where you only have speaking at the beginning, speaking at the end, and you don't have nothing except for music to provide the background in the middle. So here is the trailer for that and a little talk about Hush from Sarah Michelle Gellar and Whedon himself.
Can't even shout, can't even cry. The gentlemen are coming by, looking in windows, knocking on doors. They need to take 7 and they might take yours. Can't call to mom, can't say a word. They're gonna die of screaming, but you won't be heard.
Hush, a special Buffy.
I do agree. I think Hush for me was the hardest.
Yeah.
I think it was one of those moments where I thought, oh, this is great. You know, a whole episode with no lines. Like, this is a breeze. And boy, was I wrong.
The writing it, first of all, I was like, I was terrified. Just totally, more terrified than with the musical. I just couldn't pull it off. But then when we were shooting it, because everybody knew their action, but there were no lines, there was no rhythm, there was no cue. So I would call action, and everybody would do everything all at once. It was like 10 seconds long.
So you could hear in that just how tough, you know, doing an episode like Hush was, but it was one of the very popular ones besides Once More with Feeling in season 6 that was one of the popular episodes on Buffy.
Cool.
And one more thing to bring up, as I searched the internet, as I usually do, there was a parody on the Silence that we're talking about today. It's called Zig Zag. It's a animation where they use paper stop motion to act out the scenes. And this was a parody that they did.
Submitted for your approval. Four friends smoking a blunt. Little did they realize that the blunt they're smoking is not of the natural kind, but that of a different place, a different strain, of a cannabis that can only be grown in the deepest jungles of the Twilight Zone.
Oh, okay. Cornelius, that Gutenbergian fellow doesn't belong as part of our club. We're better than him.
Harumph, 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 harumph.
Hey, I'm just as good as any of you gentlemen. Did you ever see Amazon Women on the Moon?
Why, Cornelius, that Kentucky Fried actor is too loud for our quiet club.
All right, I'll make a bet with you. I'll lock myself in a small room for 2 years without saying a word.
Harumph, 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 harumph.
Steve Gutenberg, a fallen 80s icon, just got cast in a farcical drama that involves not a talking robot, but a wide-angled shot of his descent right into the Twilight Zone.
Why, Cornelius, I can't believe he did it. Why, Cornelius, how absurd of him.
We never bet anything.
Well, Mr. Gutsy, what do you have to say for yourself?
Oh, my God. He has no tongue. Goodness gracious, man. You cut off your tongue for a bet we never even made? No, I tripped and bit it off yesterday. How ironic. Mr. Gutenberg just got a lesson in life, taught by that naughty teacher we like to call the Twilight Zone.
That was pretty good. But the views said on this is not necessarily those of the Talking Twilight Zone group.
That's
just
really good. That's great.
And OCD did one like on Time Enough at Last where they have an image of Bill Clinton in that one.
Oh, good Lord.
Another one they did was Monsters on Duo Maple Street. But yeah, but this one I thought was kind of funny when I was watching it.
That's
but yeah, maybe I want to check it out.
I like that.
It's up on YouTube. But that's pretty much it. My rating, I would give this a 1.5. As a morality play, I would give it a 3. So I average it out to about 2.5 out of 5.
That's
so with
cool.
that, I'll
that's
pass
cool.
it on to Bobby.
All right. Thank you, Robert. Thanks very much. Well, in my vote on the poll for this episode, it is an intriguing episode. Everybody takes it seriously, all the actors, and it does have a double twist ending, which is unusual even for the Twilight Zone. But I also I wanted to give it a higher rating, around a 3 or even more than that. But I gave it 2.5 simply because it's too stupid to be taken seriously. The characters in this little play are just beyond stupidity. And that always bothers me. It doesn't give me anybody to latch on to because everything that happens is their own fault. And recently we've had too many stories like that. We had the idiots with the camera that took pictures in the future, and they all ended up falling out the windows simply because each one wanted all the money. And then we had those idiots who thought they could wander across the desert hauling a bunch of gold bars with them. So, you know, these people in Twilight Zone episodes who do obviously stupid things, it's hard to latch onto them. I don't care what happens to them. And when they end up in a bad way, I shrug my shoulders and say, okay, well, you got pretty much what you deserve. It is, I think, like I said, an intriguing idea for a story, but it doesn't require suspension of disbelief. It requires suspension of intelligence in order to get your hand around it. Obviously, it's a no-brainer that nobody in their right mind would trade a body part for any amount of money. It's simply absurd. It simply makes no sense. What are you going to give up? Your ability to see or to hear or to walk or anything like that? You can't. And what will the money do for you afterwards? Are you going to go out and buy new eyes or something? It's ludicrous. So that's the one area of life in which money can't really help you in any way. So for that reason alone, it's just, you know, to me, it's just ridiculous. And then it seems odd to me that in this gentleman's club here, where everybody seems to be pretty well off, even though some of them are lying about it, if I just take things as they appear, that anybody gives a damn about making a bet for money. Money doesn't mean that much to them. So it seems, you know, and the guy who makes the bet, who stands there and says he can't stand listening to him talk anymore, join another club or leave or do something like that. You know, nobody's tying you down and making you stay there to listen to this guy. So, you know, take it on yourself and do something about it. As for me personally, to be honest with you, I wouldn't want to be on the wrong end of that bet and not be able to speak for a year. But I would be more appalled by having to live in a glass booth there and have everybody watching me every minute of the day and having microphones around, because I value my privacy so much. I would find that to be appalling to me. I would turn down that bet just on the basis of that alone, because I think it's just too obnoxious to do that. That's like being in prison and being confined in prison and not being able to go out or anything. It's just nobody wants to go through anything that ridiculous. And the other problem I have with it is just that it kind of takes this business about even losing your vocal cords rather lightly. And you compare, when I saw this, not when I saw it years ago, of course, but when I watched this the other day again, I immediately think of a real life incident like this that doesn't involve a bet. And that's the well-known film critic, Roger Ebert, who I've been watching for decades ever since he started, and his reviews are sent to my mailbox. And back in 2002, he developed thyroid cancer, and it spread to his, vocal cords, and it spread to his jaw eventually. And though he has survived since then, he's had an appalling number of surgeries. I was reading it on the internet earlier today, and his vocal cords were severed because of that. Today he cannot speak at all. He eats and drinks through tubes, and his vocal cords are completely gone. He's had surgeries to try to restore them that were unsuccessful, and he had to have part of his jaw removed and been rebuilt artificially. So you know what? That's a perfect example. If you need a real life example of how you don't want to get into anything like that, because that's what it's going to be like. Now, the main thing for me about this episode that disturbs me is that there's a gigantic hole in the middle of it. And that is that at the end, this guy says that he had his vocal cords, the nerves severed. Somebody needs to tell me where you get that done. Who does that? Do you go to your doctor and tell him that you want to have your vocal cords severed? What doctor is going to do such a ridiculous, insane thing? You go to the hospital and tell them you want to have that done. Nobody gets that done voluntarily, even if you wanted to. Only if you had, like Roger Ebert did, you had a growth on there or something that's going to threaten your life. So I don't really understand in this episode how he did that. If he didn't do it to himself, he would have bled to death. So it's not only improbable, it's virtually impossible for him to have done that. I thought it might have been a more interesting story if he had been in cahoots with a doctor and they agreed to do this in order to split the money. That would have, you know, I think that would have added a little to the story and made it look less ridiculous.
That's probably what they did. That's probably what happened. He probably went in halves with the doctor.
Yeah, but that's not made clear in the story, is it? I don't remember that.
Right, but that's what I'm figuring, yeah.
No, I don't know. You can't voluntarily do that. No doctor is going to take any part of your body off. Unless
no.
There is an obvious reason to do it. So that alone is ridiculous.
No
also,
way.
I find it a little bit off-putting that, you know, these supposedly rich guys, even though one of them is not, make this bet. I thought it would have been made more sense to find somebody homeless and out on the street and make a bet who had nothing to lose by having his vocal cords removed because he's, you know, he's starving to death anyway. But it's hard for me to feel sorry for any of them at all, because it's just a ridiculous thing to do, and it just is. And there's no motivation there. Money is not enough of motivation. Now, I looked around the internet today before the show, like I always do, to see what other people thought of this episode. And it got a very big rating at IMDb, 8.3. So only five people reviewed it, but they all liked it. But I found another website that apparently somebody started on his own, and he comments on it. And I just want to read two paragraphs at it because this strikes me as being very bizarre. In his first paragraph, he writes, "The Silence, a second season outing for this classic TV series, is one that I don't like to watch too often because it bothers me. I have a hard time just looking at it as entertainment. It's primarily about a very bad joke that ends up having disastrous consequences. The ending is more than melancholy, which I abhor, but I'd go so far as to call it tragic." Then in his very last paragraph, he writes, "While the bet and the setup might be intriguing on a certain level, the outcome is what makes it all unwatchable for me. I just don't like the devastating consequences of the story. As I said before, it bothers me." Now, I completely disagree with this. It doesn't bother me in the least. If there are any Twilight Zone episodes that bother me or that I find difficult to watch, even though I love them, it would be The Hitchhiker and Eye of the Beholder. Because here's two women who have done nothing to find themselves in the position they're in. One is already dead and still has the death stalking her anyway. And the other is simply living in a society that values being grotesque over being beautiful. So those are people to feel sorry for. And those, I think, are really literally hard episodes to watch. They're very unnerving and very difficult to do. But not in this one, because I don't care. I really don't care that he's dumb enough to go ahead and do that, and that the other guy lied about having enough money. Another thing about it is that, you know, I don't know, like I said a minute ago, that it's all that difficult to stay quiet. I would agree to not talk for a year wouldn't be a picnic. But I still think that being in that glass booth is a lot more difficult. If I was in there, I wouldn't have anything to talk about anyway. What am I talk about? I'm stuck in there every day. I have no outside contact. There's nobody to talk about. And in my review on the board, I said, I don't see any bathroom facilities anywhere around there. So that's going to be difficult too. Somebody's always going to be with him. There's a lot about this that makes it very, very difficult. But it's obviously just a no-brainer, you know, to sell off or do anything with a body part. You know, ask anybody who's disabled or has had that happen how much money you can give them for it. They would turn that down in a heartbeat. So I gave
Bobby, ask you something?
Yeah, sure. What?
First of all, I agree with you about the bathroom situation. The only way they could solve something like that is they had to wire up the bathroom to make sure he doesn't talk.
Exactly.
The question I want to ask you think he should come and sue them for what happened to him personally since a contract was reneged, it being a oral contract?
I don't know why you would bother to do that. He's lost his ability to speak. And suing for what? More money? Money doesn't really.
Wait a minute. He can't sue them. He can sue the guy. He can sue Archie Taylor. But Archie Taylor has no money. So he's screwed everywhere you go. You look at it. He's screwed everywhere around.
Yeah, but you know what? I don't care if he did have money. Even if at the end of the episode he'd handed over a check, my comment is, so what? Okay, great. You just got your lousy $500,000, but guess what? You can't speak anymore. Sorry, I just don't buy into it.
And he's still a young man. He's still a fairly young man. Apparently in that episode, he's what, about 38 years old? About 38 years old in that episode. So, you know, the rest of his life, he can't speak. And even if he sued, yeah, you're right. What does he get back? And his wife probably left him by now. His wife is long gone. That woman just said, "Hey, that's it. You're in that glass enclosure, and I'm going." She had an appetite for money. Well, she had an appetite, and she was taking care of it while he was in that room.
Yeah, I think it would have been more of a twist ending to simply have him hand over the money, and then the guy say to him, "Well, here's your money, but you certainly won't be speaking ever again." And I think that's a lot. This guy,
Hey, you know what? Wouldn't it be been a great twist ending if he handed him over the check and his wife married Taylor? That would have been a great twist ending. He hands him over the check and the wife marries Taylor.
Well, I agree, and that's why I say that.
That would have been great to me, yeah.
Yeah, I've said this before on certain episodes. I usually get a little more out of it if I have somebody to relate to. But some characters in Twilight Zone episodes are so stupid and do so many things that are obviously ridiculous, like those idiots who tried to walk across the desert with those gold bars, that you can see it coming from a mile away. It's not going to work.
Exactly.
So, and if you don't care whether you never speak again, that's fine. And money's more important to you, well, great. But I can't imagine any human being with a half a brain agreeing to such utter nonsense. So I do like the twist ending at the end, the double twist ending, where he ends up not having the money to pay it off anyway, and he went in voluntarily, had his vocal cord severed. That's an interesting. So I gave it a 2.5, but I think with a little more believability, I might have gone to 3 or 3.5. But there's just so much stupidity I can take from Twilight Zone characters, and this one is just. I'm still curious. I still would like to know how it is you voluntarily get your vocal cord severed. I don't know. I mean, a doctor, no doctor, obviously, no hospital, no surgeon is going to do that without a legitimate reason. Huh?
He obviously went in, he obviously had to deal with the doctor, and I think my best ending would be the tailor gives him the money, and the guy can no longer speak, but he ends up with Tennyson's wife. That would have been
the best. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, that's not bad.
He ends up with Tennyson's wife. Here you go. I got a whole year of solitude. I didn't have to hear you, and I got your beautiful wife. Goodbye. that would have been too nasty, so I'm not going to do that on Twilight Zone.
But it's a pretty good episode. Like I said, I like that little twist ending at the end. I don't remember, you know, I was very young. The first time was the one. I don't know whether I really saw that coming or not. I doubt it. And so that makes it a little bit different. But, you know, you have to kind of look the other way. And it's all another odd thing I found about the episode, maybe it's just me. But I know it's not one of those videotaped episodes. It almost looks like it. It doesn't really look much like film. It's on film, but it doesn't look like it to me. Maybe because it just takes place, you know, in one place, it doesn't go outside or anything.
Nah.
But it looked a little bit like that to me. And so, you know, it didn't really bother me any, but...
So what is your rating on this one?
2.5.
Okay.
Yeah, slightly above average because...
All right, cool.
It is slightly above average. It just doesn't go the rest of the way. And like I said, I don't find the ending tragic. Why am I going to find the ending tragic? Somebody was asking for gold. It's not tragic. He's the one who did it. He's the one who did it. And maybe it might have been tragic maybe if he had gotten his vocal cord severed with a promise that they could be restored and then found out that they couldn't be after all. Now, that's tragedy, although he's asking for that too. But I enjoyed that. This was one of those I was watching. So it's pretty good. I don't want to, you know, come down too heavily on it because I don't think that's really fair. But so it's not a bad episode. It's just... there's a lot of stupidity here, and the lesson learned is obvious. You don't give up an ability or a body part for any amount of money on Earth. Now, today, of course, because it's 50 years later, you can have artificial body parts and things replaced that go bad, but back then, you were out of luck. It's as simple as that. So I'll stick with my 2.5. That's it for me, Lynn.
Okay, Dave. And Dave. Okay, uh-huh. Dave, are you here? Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
And remember now, I said to you on the last show that you said something about Bobby not giving fours and fives and high ratings to episodes, but he has actually. Invaders and Eye of the Beholder, a lot of episodes he's given fours and fives to.
He's absolutely entitled to give whatever rate it is. It was just probably, there'd been a spate of, probably it was the beginning of series two with starting off with, unfortunately, the actor that's just died a week or so ago, you know, the aircraft one, the Robertson character,
oh,
Robertson,
yeah.
But that was, I think, the first episode of series two. And
We missed you last week.
I don't know what the issue was last week, but certainly, let me get to the episode then. Quite a number of things, really. The premise was all right, but I mean, if I would have been in that situation, even though this was a bet between gentlemen, I think I would have had I would have said, well, look, I want this money lodging with some... I mean, the friend, one of the friends was a lawyer, wasn't he? The character played by Jonathan Harris, the chap from,
Lost in Space,
yeah. I would have said, well, I'll go ahead, but I want you to hand over the money into the safekeeping of the lawyer. I suppose they could have done a double crossing, but I would have wanted the money lodged with some third party. Never mind about the chap writing to his wife to come and visit him. If I'd have been the chap who was going to lose $500,000, I'd be thinking, let's get his wife down here, let him have some conjugal visits. That might get him talking. So that's one thing. The other things, I mean, when he was getting desperate and started to say, I'll give you 5,000 or 6,000, that was a silly amount. I mean, nobody who'd gone through 11 months or whatever it was, or 6 months even, would have taken 5,000 as against $500,000. He would have had to at least offer him 50,000, I would have thought, for him to even consider it. I mean, let's face it, they put this guy up in this posh club, when I'm assuming he's not dining on, soup and beans on toast. He's probably having gourmet meals every night. It probably cost $10,000 to feed him there for a year with a butler waiting on him hand and foot. So that's another thing. Other thing that was strange is if you want him to talk, why keeping him in isolation? Obviously, they've got to keep him under observation. But what I would have done is said, well, you've got to stay in here. But I'm assuming it's one of these clubs where people lunch every day, because they're probably people of independent means that may not work, or they go to the club to dine every evening. I would have said, every evening at 7 when we dine, you know, there's 10 of them around the table, you have to come and sit at the dining table with us. In other words, to put even more temptation in front of him to actually open up and speak. And indeed, you know, it's round the club that this man was incessantly talking. So
well,
that's what I
said. If you're stuck in an isolation booth, you won't have anything to say anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I talk to myself at home, but probably the one place I don't talk to myself is in the toilet. I mean, I'm more like to talk to myself if I go out in the garden and think, oh, God, this is a mess, or looks like I have to cut the grass. That's when I might talk to myself. But that was strange. The other thing is, you said about getting his own back on the chap at the end. Obviously, presumably, we're in the days of this was classed as a debt of honour, and a gambling debt didn't have any standing in law. So you probably couldn't have sued him for the money. It was definitely just a debt of honour. What was the other thing? There's a couple of notes I'd made here as well. Oh, yeah. What I would have done, if to have a little bit of a surprise ending, because this chap's got all these hours to while away in this confinement, I would have had him take up some sort of hobby, but something that seemed completely innocuous. Something like, I don't know, asking for, say, a potter's wheel to be in the room, in that glass house thing, so that he would spend all day, you know, with clay on the pot and moulding pots and things like that.
Dave, didn't you wonder what he was doing for that whole entire year? What was he doing to occupy his time? I agree with you. That's true. A potter's wheel or something, because the guy is sitting there. Why? What is he doing for that entire year to occupy his time?
Right. I think he was a book reader, wasn't he? Didn't he have a book he was reading?
A whole year?
Okay.
Come on.
But the point I was leading up to was the fact that it would seem such an innocuous hobby. But when at the end, and the chap revealed he couldn't pay him, this man has been moulding clay with his hands for a year. He would have absolutely strong hands, and he would have put his hands around his throat and just strangled the guy. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Because he would have been doing something, you think, oh, that's relaxing, he's making the time passing. But I don't know if you've ever had a go at throwing a clay pot. I have a couple of times when I was at art college, And you need an awful lot of strength in your hands to do that. And he would have been able to sort of choke him to death. Virtually.
That's awesome. That's the greatest ending.
Yeah. And one other thing I've just mentioned, and this is not to do with the episode really, but just on the point about having his vocal cords cut, surely most people in the room here, I would think, certainly Bobby, I would have thought, had heard of a British actor called Jack Hawkins, who very famous actor. He had throat cancer, and he had his vocal cords taken out. He had a hole in his neck. And he used to talk, they had a flap they put, and he either held this flap against his throat and went up through his lungs. And he was blowing air and he would talk through his lungs that way. I don't know if you remember that guy. And he managed to actually...
Yeah, I do. That's pretty much the same thing that happened to Roger Ebert. Same kind of thing.
Right.
Ebert has one of those artificial computerized voices that speaks for him.
Right. Well,
he has prosthetic chins that he has to use now too.
Yeah, prosthetic chin. Yeah.
Right, but Jack Hawkins did it by, doing it by just using his lungs like a bellows and shape.
Right, it's
he
like
would shape,
swallowing.
He would
swallowing and talking at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, I mean, a crazy thing to do. And the other thing is when he was being offered $5,000. Dollars to break up. He probably paid the surgeon at least $5,000 to operate on his neck. So it was a crazy amount to offer him.
Why not accept the debt, assuming that the guy's going to back out and offer you less money at the end anyway, and thinking to yourself, I'm not going to go through with it. I'll just wait till he offers me $50,000 and I'll take that and be happy with it.
Yeah, the only other way they could have done it, to my mind, is if the boat the chap had set the bet, but he'd set the bet at say $50,000, and then all the other people in the club said, "I want a piece of that action. I'll bet you another $50,000,"
and then you get
10 of them each betting $50,000, but the two are in collusion, so
yeah,
it costs them. He has to put up $50,000, but 450,000 is put up by the rest of the club members.
Yes.
He pretends to hand over his 10,000, but between them, they make 450,000 and split it.
I like that. Yes. I like that.
But anyway, I quite enjoyed it. I just feel as though there was that. I mean, putting somebody in isolation is not the way to get them to talk. They should have forced him to actually mingle and interact. Well, and have very interesting debates. I mean, it'd be like bringing somebody on the talking Twilight Zone and not letting them speak. They'd be, but they want to say their bit.
But there's no way that he should have gone into this bet without knowing for certain that the guy had the money. I'm sorry, you're talking a half $1 million. I'm going to stay quiet for a year. I'm going to be isolated, and you will not prove to me that you have this money. And he goes, and pompously, he stands, my credit is well known around here. Well, excuse me, does everybody have access to your bank account? I don't think so. I would like to know that you have that $500,000. Bull crap. I want to know you have it. And it's amazing that he didn't do that.
And one last thing I'll say, and just this refers to the one from last week, the Rip Van Winkle ones. That was exactly the same mistake, I feel. The fact that this doctor had invented suspended animation, that was worth more than £100,000 worth of $100,000 worth of gold. That invention alone must have been worth 10, 20, 40 times as much as it's stolen.
Absolutely.
Well, I want to add this. I want to agree with Dave about one thing, and that is this business about being put in an isolation. The only reason to be able to speak in the first place in life is so you can speak to other people. If you're the only one around, obviously you don't even need to be able to speak. And time enough and last, poor Henry Venus had nobody to talk to at all. And so it didn't matter that he could speak. He was all alone. So, it's much more difficult to set somebody out in public and tell them they can't see anything than to lock them up. What is that?
In actual fact, he did speak, I think, because when they brought him that meal in, one of the sections where he brought a meal, and he was sitting right facing us in the meal, he started to eat his meal, and the first taste of the meal, he went, mmm.
Right.
I don't know whether that's classed as words, but he certainly made a noise then.
You're right. Yeah. So he did. Yes, he did. They were talking about words, so word, an actual word, not a sound, but a word. But still, you gotta show me something. Was it Jerry Maguire, the movie Jerry Maguire? Show me the money. Show me the money. Come on, baby. You're not gonna tell me. I'll shut up. Yeah, I'll shut up for a year. You'll shut me down for a year. Bobby would probably be happy about that. I'll shut up for a year. You stick me in a room, I'll shut up. You show me the $500,000. It's definitely going to be in your bank account a year from now, and I'll shut my mouth. I won't say a damn word. Okay. All right.
The money is irrelevant. It doesn't matter. That to me, that was a minor thing, because even if you won $50 million, I mean, you can't put that up against the ability to speak. There's no way.
Have
the money or not.
Yeah, but he severed his vocal cords. See, if somebody put that up against me, I would do it without severing my vocal cords. I would do it. I think I could. A year? You go 1 year. Okay, 365 days without speaking. I think I could do that for $500,000.
Well, if you think it's so much about money that you're willing to give up your ability to speak, then it should be relatively easy to just not speak. It's the giving up your ability to talk that's difficult.
Yeah, possibly.
Well, of course, there, Lynn, you've put your finger on a good little wheeze there, because we could have had it very similar to, if you remember, Around the World in 80 Days, which was like
a bet
like this. What they could have had is that the man had a calendar, but for simple ease, he didn't use a calendar, but he had a wall, and he crossed the days off. And when he crossed 365 days off, he said, "Yes, I've done it." And they said, "Sorry, it's a leap year. You've got another day to go."
That's right. I forgot about that. Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think I could do it. I could. I actually could do it for a year. If that meant $500,000 and I couldn't talk for 1 year for $500,000, I would not sever my vocal cords. I would just say, okay, I don't talk for 365 days.
Yeah, well,
but
you know what?
I
live with you, and I seriously doubt that.
And anyway, the inflation, he wasn't offered that amount. He was offered the modern-day equivalent of at least $5 million, if not $10 million. So that's what you've got. The amount of money that he was offered in 1961 of $500,000 must be at least equivalent to you taking on the bet for no less than $5 million.
Well, do you really think it's advanced that much by now?
Oh, easily. It's only 10
times. You think $500,000 over, 40, 50 years?
Yeah, you think of a house, you could probably in 1960 buy a house for $50,000. Well, that same house now might be worth $500,000.
Yeah, I would ask for it in gold, and then with gold running 1,800
an ounce. We can synthesize
that
now.
Yeah, and then you should put yourself in the suspended animation and wait 100 years and then catch. every episode leads to another, right?
Did you give your rating, Dave?
I think it wasn't quite a 3, but it's a good 2.5, I would think. Yeah,
that's cool. I can live with that. Yeah, and I give it a 3, and Bobby, would you give it? Oh, he's been knocked off. Oh, jeez. Well, he gave it a 2.5.
He gave it 2.5 like me,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah. All right, cool. All right, so now, Robert, I have to depend on you to give me the time frame. I'm figuring October.
Next show of Talking Twilight Zone is October the 8th, and
eighth,
we will be discussing Shadow Play with Dennis Weaver.
Okay. All right, so October the 8th. I was going to say the 7th, so I wasn't too far off. I depend on you for this, my darling. I really do. So
I was thought I'd do my radio voice here.
Yes, please do. And I'll tell you, I listen to your shows all the time, your jazz shows and your oldie shows. I love your oldie shows. Fabulous.
Yeah, thank
fabulous.
You.
So we will go October 8th, and that is Shadow Play with starring Dennis Weaver. All right. And so we are, if no one else has any, oh, and Bobby's
well,
back.
Yeah. I was
Bobby's
just
going to
ask one thing. Robert, will he be on standard time?
Yeah, because we'll be switching the fall back. When
I,
is
I
that anyway?
That's what I'm asking. It might be the day after the Sunday, mightn't it? So
yeah, I think
it,
it's Sunday
some,
usually.
It's sometime around then. So listeners of this, just be careful that we may be near to switching to from summertime to standard.
Okay, cool. All right, so we will be back October 8th, as far as Robert tells me. And that will be with Shadow Play. And I hope to see all of you there. And I will be there. And Bobby, do you have anything else to say before we...
No.
I don't think so. Okay. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everybody. And as we go out, we'll go out with a little deep purple hush.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Talk to you next time.
Now, hush, hush. I need a loving and I'm not to blame. Now, hush.